This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
What you said there is I'm in control of my values now, of who I want to be, who I represent. And I always used to think that that's who I was when I was a DJ. But I wasn't, because I was getting smashed all the time and always doing stupid things and then wondering why that was. It's because my actions aren't aligned with my values. And that's never going to be possible when I'm, you know, when I'm drinking, because I'm always out of control.
That is Sean Willis, this week's guest on Over the Influence. To say that Sean has got quite the story to share is a little bit of an understatement. We start in his childhood, we go through to his teens, his time in the army, travelling the world as a DJ, to hitting rock bottom and to where he is today. It's an incredible listen, and Sean has got so much to share. And just to let you know, throughout the course of this episode, there are multiple references to using drugs. So if you find that triggering or you don't want to hear about that, we totally understand. Just make sure you come back next week. So let's get into this week's episode with Sean.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I'm 10 years alcohol-free this year. I joined Over the Influence 4 years after I'd stopped drinking, and I expected it was going to be a place where I could talk anonymously about my shameful secret. But what I actually got transformed me and really surprised me. I spent hours talking to like-minded people all over the world on Zooms about our wins and our struggles, and realised being alcohol-free was something to be proud of, not be ashamed of. And then I became a Zoom host myself, and I love every call, which is different and fascinating. I got amazing advice on the forums when I was struggling, and giving advice to others on the forums reminded me why I stopped drinking. I went on outdoor adventures at mountains, and I met people in real life who I feel like I've known forever, and I've had the most amazing, deep conversations with them. I found actual real-life friends and a brilliant supportive community of like-minded people, all shouting the benefits of being alcohol-free. Now, I'm happy to talk to anyone I know about how I'm gloriously alcohol-free and how much I gained by giving up one thing. If you have a voice in your head wondering if you should rethink your relationship with alcohol, then you probably should, and Over the Influence is an excellent place to start. I wish I'd had Over the Influence when I first stopped drinking, but I'm so grateful. It's a big part of my life now, which I wouldn't be without.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. We say it every week, and it's because we mean it. Thank you. Thank you for being there. Thank you for listening, wherever you may be on your alcohol-free adventure. Not going to use the J word. I'm going to start off with the alcohol-free adventure today. Maybe you're finding us for the very first time, and if that is the case, please allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I'm 51 now, and this year I will be 7 years alcohol-free. Flipping heck. People say, Shaz, how bad did it get? How much did you drink? I drank too much, too quickly and far too often, and it was not heading in a great direction. So I took a break from booze, and it is hands down, and it still is, still the case, the best decision I ever made, not just for myself, but for my family and for my close friends as well. It's ace, and it's why we do what we do. We wang on about alcohol-free life. Isn't it great? Week in, week out. Ben Anderson, how are you?
Hi, fine, thanks. Ben, 36, live in Liverpool. I'll be 5 years alcohol-free in July. Shaz, I've got to tell you just really quickly, because I know that you'll really like this. I went to, last few days, by night, me and Shaz produced the world's favourite alcohol-free podcast, Over the Influence. But by day, we both work for the BBC. I was down for the first time since starting this job at Broadcasting House for the last few days. Having meetings. And it's cool. You know, it's the bit you see on telly. You
go through those main doors.
It's cool. It's great. But we had a full day of meetings. I thought, oh, you know what? I'm absolutely shattered. You know, a load of them were talking about going to the pub after the meetings. I thought, I'm not going to do that. But then one of them went, you know what's just round the corner from here? Ben doesn't drink. Let's go to that Lucky Saint pub. Ben, come on. The Lucky Saint pub's around the corner from here. And I just thought, how nice is that?
You know, isn't
these
that
are work
lovely?
Colleagues. And I haven't known them because it was people from all around the country there. So they're people you see on Teams. And, you know, I've got some mates that are in that kind of the editor cohort, Sharon. It's all we had an editor's conference.
Oh, well, excuse
darling.
Me. I won't be privy to such, you know, levels.
But I just thought how lovely that was. That, you know, rather than kind of let's go to the nearest pub or whatever, it was, right, Ben doesn't drink. Let's go to the Lucky Saint pub. Yeah, they serve alcohol as well. But, you know, Ben's, you can have Lucky Saint on tap. And I just thought that was really nice.
That is so lovely.
It just warmed my heart. And I think it just shows you, when we started this podcast 5 years ago, the world was still slightly sceptical about people who'd given up alcohol. They looked at them slightly strange. What do you mean?
I don't trust people that don't drink.
But in the 5 years that we've been doing this, it's changed so much. And I just thought that was a lovely moment.
Really nice. Really nice. And very, very quickly, because we do have a guest, believe it or not, waiting in the wings.
Don't worry, guys. I'm enjoying this. I'm loving it.
Don't mind us, Sean. We'll be with you in a minute. You just wait there. It's fine. Our intros are ridiculous, honestly. It is Cockle Warm, is that, Ben? It's lovely. Was it nice? Did you have a nice time?
I had two Lucky Saint pints on draft, and I love that. I love that you can get an alcohol-free beer on draft. Going to be honest, I know my guest is currently sitting in London and probably likes it quite a lot. London isn't my favourite place in the world.
Anyway, we'll move on.
But it was great to have a Lucky Saint pint in the Lucky Saint pub.
Really nice.
It was awesome. We've got to move on because our guest before we started recording told us he's 37 years old and Shaz needs to do our auntie Shaz. Oh, we're going to love it when someone's so young gets
them out. I just want to squeeze him and go, well done, you. Well done. It's too early in the episode. I can't weird our guest out before we've even started. Sean Willers, founder of Willers Fitness, as Ben mentioned there, based in London. Sean, first of all, thank you so much for your patience while we just like bang on about
our absolutely love
lives.
That was the best intro I've ever been involved in. Thank you so much.
And welcome to the podcast. How the heck are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast today.
You're more than welcome. Go on, I'll start with it. 37, you're young, it's brilliant. It's just incredible what you're doing. 18 months sober, and I think it's safe to say, if you don't mind me saying this, you've got quite a story to share, haven't you? It's not been an easy ride over the years.
No, it's not. And I was trying to work it. I'm 2 years sober in August, so where does that make me? Around 20 years?
May, June, July, August. You're doing brilliantly. Let's call it nearly 2 years.
21 months.
21,
yeah.
There we go.
Amazing. It's good. Amazing.
Fantastic. But yes, I have had, quite the journey so far in my life that has brought me to this moment. And it has been some ride, that's for sure.
Where would you like us to start with your story?
That's a great question. I'll give you a little taste of my upbringing, and then I'll let you decide where we go from there. How does that sound?
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thank you, Sean.
So I grew up in Macclesfield. I was actually born in Colchester. My dad was in the Paras, but I only lived there till I was maybe 2 or 3 years old. I moved to Macclesfield. My mum and dad split up at quite an early age. You know, my dad went and did his own thing. My mum stayed with me. Later on down the line, three other boys. So there was four boys. Typical low income family. Not much money. My mum was going through her own journey. You know, especially with alcohol at the time, which I wasn't aware of. And I was a very, very badly behaved child from. I always remember my nan saying from 3 years old, she knew I was going to be an absolute nightmare. And I have no idea why. But that, you know, that got worse as I got older. And in secondary school, I didn't really fit in with it at all. I was one of the kids who was quite intelligent, but would not listen to anyone. And that had a big impact on my home life. And I started drinking from quite an early age. But I think in England, especially in, you know, small towns, around 14, 15, I don't know if it is now, but, you know, when I was growing up, everyone was drinking around that time. But the problem is that alcohol didn't agree with me from the start. It was always an issue. But what happened is that added additional stress on my home life because I was now drinking and not going to school and misbehaving. And my mum was you know, she won't mind me saying this, an alcoholic. You know, she was having her own problems with the drink. And I think all the additional pressure as well of having four boys, one of them being an absolute nightmare in a low-income family, is stressful enough. And when I was 15, I dropped out of school. So I don't know if I chose not to or if I just didn't have a choice in the matter at this point. But I didn't go into school, and I did something called a work placement. Now, conventionally in a work placement, you're supposed to do 2 or 3 days at school and 2 or 3 days at, you know, a work placement. But the school wouldn't have me back. So I ended up doing 3 days at, it was an exhaust manufacturer in Macclesfield. But at the same time, my behaviour was getting worse and worse, and so was my drinking. And then my mum sort of had to come to the decision that I couldn't live in the house anymore because she had 3 other boys to think of. It wasn't just about me. Now, at the time, I obviously blamed my mum. You know, how could she do this? Because I didn't understand. You know, I was still a child. So I moved into a hostel, and I was working the exhaust manufacturer, but that got to the point where I was causing trouble then at the hostel through my drinking. I got kicked out of there, and then I was homeless. So I was sort of sofa surfing for a little bit of friends, and then one of the guys called Mark, who works at the exhaust manufacturer, said I could come and live at his place just outside of Macclesfield in Bollington. But what I didn't realise is he was actually a functioning heroin addict. So what used to happen is we would go to his brother's, who was also a heroin addict, and they would like chase the dragon whilst I would sit there and wait for the dad to come pick them up. It was, you know, it was a strange, very strange situation for a 15-year-old to be in. But still, nevertheless, you know, with Mark, what an incredible guy he was. And I think at that moment, that's when I realised the destruction of drugs, that what they do to people of all sorts of backgrounds. But if only I had taken that lesson on later on down the line. So I ended up living there for a little bit, but it comes to the point where that sort of run dry, and then the exhaust manufacturer wouldn't have me anymore. So I was homeless, no job, no prospects, and sort of sleeping on the streets. But I was fortunate, on my 16th birthday, my granddad decided that they would take me in and move me up to Wolverhampton. But it was a very difficult decision. I was always really close to my granddad, but they were 80 years old. You know, they were sort of, I don't know if they were ready for that. But that gave me an opportunity for a new life, and I ended up moving to Wolverhampton at 16. I don't know if I feel I should carry on here, because sometimes the reason why I do this, because otherwise I go on my journey and then before you know it, an hour's up. So
Sean, would love you to carry on.
Yeah, so thank you, Ben. So I moved to Wolverhampton, and I had this 2-year period of not really knowing what to do. You know, I wasn't drinking now, which was great. My granddad, I really respected that man. He was an incredible individual from an era of and a time of strong community, strong values, integrity. He was from London. He was from Bermondsey and had moved up to Wolverhampton with work. That's where he lived with my nan. But he was just an incredible individual, and I really respected him. But it was still such a difficult situation for me, because I'm now 16. And I had kind of, it's quite funny, actually, because I thought I was, you know, a bit of a Jack the Lad in Macclesfield. But obviously it's a small town, and I'd moved to Wolverhampton, which is quite rough around the edges itself. And that was some culture shock for me, that was, especially going into, you know, I'd been arrested quite a lot. So I had, I was going to, like youth offenders, and I had to transfer from Macclesfield to Wolverhampton, and that was quite the culture shock for sure. But anyway, I spent a couple of years not really knowing what to do. I was trying different things, you know, going to night school. I got a couple of GCSEs. I tried electrician. That didn't really stick, and I was trying to find friends as well. I was smoking a bit of weed, and then I was with some friends that I'd met, and they took me to a Thai boxing gym. And I absolutely loved it. And that really was where I found my passion for fitness at around maybe 17 at this time. But I really took it, you know, I threw everything into it. And at 18, I decided this was going to be something that I could, you know, do as a job and enjoy. And I did my fitness qualifications, my level 2, my level 3 personal trainer. And I spent, you know, I ended up getting a job in Fitness First, and I spent 2 years doing that, and I absolutely loved it. you know, there was, I was still a bit of a rebel. You know, I had to move out of my nan and granddad's. I mean, I don't know how they managed that long, to be honest with me. But I'd learned some great values from my granddad. And then I think I never really remember how this come about, but the military was something that even when I was a kid, I used to like play army. You know, I used to really love that. And it's funny because I was the one person in school that every single person would have probably bet on to have never joined the military because I was the complete anti-establishment. You know, anyone told me what to do, I almost rebelled. You know, I couldn't think of anything worse. But for some reason, it drew to me. And I tried to apply when I was about 19, but because of my previous convictions, I had to wait. And I ended up joining the RAF regiment, which is the infantry for the RAF. Again, I'm not sure what drew me to that, but I did. And at 20, I joined the military. And I had a four-year period in the RAF, which was incredible. It was so strange because basic training is the ultimate form of discipline. You know, you're told what to do at every given moment. You're up at four in the morning, ironing creases down your trousers, polishing your boots. And I absolutely loved it. Like I thrived. I was one of the best recruits. I really, you know, I just loved that environment. It's not even really the team element because I was always quite a loner growing up, but I loved it. But what happened is there was still a couple of incidences when I was in the RAF that had happened that would still show that drinking was still a problem. Even though it wasn't often, it was still an issue. You know, I could maybe go out once or twice and nothing could happen, but there would always be that third time that would come. But I went to Afghanistan 6 months, obviously, you know, no drinking. I come back and I was just so, at this point, I was so focused, so disciplined. And I knew that's all I wanted to do. 4 years, do Afghanistan, come out, go back into the fitness industry, which I did. I went back into the fitness industry, moved to Southend-on-Sea because my brother was there. Me and my brother had grown really close at this point. As soon as he hit 18, we were like best friends. And anyway, I went and, you know, I never thought I was institutionalized. I never thought I was institutionalized to the military until I left and I realized how disciplined I actually was as an individual, like how determined I was to be successful at this point. So I got a job as a personal trainer. I loved it. It was brilliant. One of the best jobs I've ever had. The team were great. I was obviously full of confidence as a young 24-year-old, just come back from Afghanistan, you know, in great physical health. Anyway, so I did that. And then what happened is I got offered an opportunity to work as an aviation firefighter at Southend Airport. And I took the opportunity and I got the job and I went up to Aberdeen. So I left this job and I went up to Aberdeen. I did 3 months firefighter training. And it was incredible, you know, putting out these massive planes, driving the trucks. I couldn't believe my luck. The last day, there was 10 of us that went. The training must have cost, you know, 30K. And qualified as an aviation firefighter. Me and this guy, Dave, who was an ex-military man as well. And anyone who is in the military, even now, you know, if I meet someone who's in the military, there's still that strange bond. And we, you know, we really hit it off. Anyway, the last day we went out on the town in Aberdeen and I woke up in the morning. The hotel room is an absolute disaster zone. And the manager walked in and he said, "Sean, you're in a lot of trouble." I couldn't remember anything. I must have blacked out. Apparently we come in, trashed the hotel room. There was complaints. So I'd spent 3 months training, left this ideal job, come back to Southend, had to sit in front of the board and they sacked me for gross misconduct just because of this one night out. Again, red flags, a lot of red flags there'd been, you know, nothing too major, but a lot of red flags with my drinking. And at this point, I just wasn't interested in the fitness industry anymore, but it was the only thing that I was qualified in. So I started going out quite a lot now in Southend. A lot of typical, I don't want to say typical because I don't want to stereotype a whole generation, but a lot of boisterous nights out, you know, a lot of fighting, a lot of just getting absolutely plastered. And then I started taking cocaine. And that become just a bit of fun as it starts, you know, just every now and again. Then it was every weekend. And then the parties were becoming Friday to Saturday, Friday through till Sunday. And I started going to a lot of house music parties. Now, at the time, I wasn't really into house music. I was always a hip-hop fan from my early days. And I found house music, absolutely loved it. And we started going to after parties. And I always remember one of our friends, Ross, he had a set of CDJs. And I had a go of them, you know, on a Sunday morning, God knows at what time, you know, 8 a.m., and I loved it. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to buy myself a set of these. So I got my credit card out the next day and I bought some and I put them in my living room on the ironing board. But that was the start of something incredible, but also at the same time not, because this just almost escalated the parties now. You know, it was Monday to Friday at work. I was working at Essex University. It's like a health and fitness advisor, basically. But it was a nice, easy, cushy job. And then Friday would come up to my house, set the decks up, and then party through till Sunday. And at this point, a lot of drug use was being, you know, taken on top of the drink as well. And then me and my brother, because we were living together, we really started getting into the DJing, and we started to record some mixes, started to send them out. And we got a really lucky break at a DJ competition in Vauxhall. And this is when we was living in Southend. So we went to this DJ competition on the Wednesday, did really well. And they asked us to come back on the Friday for a nightclub called Egg in King's Cross. Now this was, you know, it was unreal.
Egg,
yeah.
So just check. Egg. Where are you off to tonight? Oh, mate, I'm going down there. Egg.
Well, it's funny. They used to have a Sunday morning party called Breakfast at Egg.
Brilliant. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Yeah. Poached every time.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I was scrambled. So we went and then they asked us to come back on the Friday. And in the scene at that time, a lot of the promoters used to do is get young aspiring DJs to come to sell tickets. So you'd sell it for 15 to people and you keep £5. So you'd make a little bit of money, but you bring a crowd to the party. So we played at Room 3 at Egg and it went really well. We brought like 50 of our friends come, everyone come up from Southend, and they asked us to come back on New Year's Eve. Same thing happened. A lot of our friends come. And what happened is that two of the DJs after us didn't turn up. So we ended up playing 3 hours. And one of the main promoters for the club watched us. He really liked us. And he like wanted us to start playing more at Egg. So anyway, at this point, my fitness was less and less and less. My drinking and drug use more and more and more. But we were starting to see, you know, an opportunity to have a career in music, which literally 3-4 months before had never even been a thought on my, you know, on my brain. I was at one point I was committed to the fitness industry, then fireman. And anyway, we started going up a lot. And then the main promoter at Egg said, look, if you want to make this happen, you've got to move to London. And ironically, it was at the same time where my boss said, if you want to, you know, you've got to pick or choose, what are you going to be, a DJ, or you're going to come and work here properly, because I wasn't doing anything at the job. So I packed it all in, left, and within a week we moved to Brick Lane in London, me and my brother.
And you're in the middle of it all.
Exactly. So you can see where this is going, Ben. But we're in a house share, me and Liam, sharing a room together. But honestly, I couldn't care less. It's like I just found this, you know, this whole new experience and opportunity for something that I never thought would happen. And anyway, as time went on, we started getting like really well involved at Egg. We were playing Friday nights, then Friday and Saturdays. Then we started doing day parties and pre-parties midweek in Shoreditch. And we were getting really well known on the scene. But at the same time, I was drinking now 3 times a week, every week. And this wasn't just like 1 or 2 drinks. This was Wednesday through till Thursday, one day rest, and back on it all weekend.
But it's work, Sean, isn't it, at that point?
Exactly. And that's exactly how I was justifying it. You know, it was just part and parcel of the scene. You know, I'm in the creative space.
I'm building my future here.
Exactly, yeah. That. And that almost made me not realise the problems that I was having. But at the same time, there was always that 10th time that would happen, if you know what I mean by that. Like I could do 9 times where there'd be no drama, but there'd always be that 10th time periodically throughout my whole life, from maybe 14-15, that 10th time would come. That might not be 10, it might be 2, or it might be 100, but you know, that side of me always used to come out. It happened on a few gigs. You know, we had an international gig in Romania, one of the biggest ones we had. I had to get taken off the decks at that point. Anyway, so Egg was going really well, but we, after 4 years there, we had sort of got to the point where we'd outgrown it. We were the most listed DJs to play at that club, and we really felt a part of the scene now, which was a strange feeling because we were around people like Lawrence Mallis, who owned it, who used to run a party called Trade at Turnmills, which was like one of the biggest parties there. Like, they were known for like turning down Madonna at the door, and me and Liam had just stepped up from nothing, and we were now a part of this, you know, this industry, and it was very exciting. But then what happened is then we started to cut a long story short, we started to get involved with some promoters in Berlin. And I went to Berlin for the first time, and that just blew my mind. I could not believe the place. I don't know if either of you have ever been to Berlin, but it was a very special place. It really was, you know, just to have that. It's giving me goosebumps now talking about it, because it was just like a sense of freedom I'd never experienced in my whole life. You know, coming from absolute chaos as a child, to then having this disciplined, regimented time in the military, to then going to Berlin and going to some of these clubs on the guest list at Burgine, you know, just like these incredible establishments that, and we'd been in the scene for 2 minutes. Anyway, we got offered to go on to the Watergate. There's a club called Watergate, which is one of my favorite clubs in the world. And we got asked to go on to the agency there. So we moved from London to Berlin, and we had the first year was incredible. We were playing clubs like Trezor. We were a part of the scene there, which again felt so surreal because we'd only been in this for 5 minutes. But now my drug use had gone from 3 or 4 times a week to, you know, every, all the time at this point. It was, you know, and it wasn't the amount, it was just the consistency of it. You know, there was no break in it at all. I always get asked that.
I imagine you're drinking as well.
Always. I had to, you know, that's how I instigated it. I'll have 2 drinks. I knew at that point I was going to use cocaine, but I always started with, you know, just 2 drinks. And
so it seems from what you're telling us, it's like opportunity, opportunity, opportunity. And you're no duck egg. You know, because obviously people were giving you these opportunities, and it was flying and flying and flying. And then, you know, you get to this point now, and it's like the dream, isn't it? It's the top of your game. It's where you want to be. And I'm really aware during the course of this episode, we have got so much to get in and talk about where you are now and how you're helping others. So when you're feeling like this and you're in Berlin and you're thinking, man, this is just incredible. At the same time, what it feels like is that you've got this incredibly positive situation, and right next to it, you've got this horrendously negative situation. So where did it take you? Where did that end?
Yeah, that's this great way to put that. So what had happened is that all these opportunities, I started to throw that back in everyone's face. My ego was getting big. I was using all the time. Within the first year, we got kicked off the Watergate agency, lost a lot of contacts. And then my drug use started happening a lot in the studio as well. So I was then trying to fight being creative with my drug problems, whilst also having the pressure of trying to keep in this career that I'm destroying because of my alcohol and drug use. Me and my brother were growing, you know, further apart. And then what happened is, when I was probably at my absolute lowest, then the lockdowns happened and all the gigs stopped. So this then presented an opportunity for me to take a step back and think, wow, you know, I was sleeping in the studio. I couldn't hold down an apartment. I had no money. I was using all the time. My gigs had gone, you know, from here to just getting what we could. And I had to get a job because I had no money. Had to get a job. We were sort of stranded in Berlin. So I ended up taking a job at Amazon because it was the only job that I could get, and it was moving the boxes. But what this did is it broke the cycle for me. It broke the cycle that I'd been stuck in. It got me moving my body again. Bearing in mind, I hadn't done any exercise for 8 years. You know, I was in really poor health. You know, you could tell from my face. And it got me moving my body again, and it got me to break the cycle. Now, I was far from clear at this point, but it did show me that I can change. I can break this. I am in a bad way. And then I had a friend who was, you know, a little older than me. He was in his 40s, but he was in great shape. And I asked him, oh, how'd you do this? And he talked to me about intermittent fasting. Now, I'd never heard of this. And at the time, I was doing AA. I was doing CA. I had therapy from the RAF Benevolent Fund, which is like, you know, charity for ex, you know, veterans that they paid for the therapy. Nothing was working. I started fasting. And what that did is it gave me back control. And I feel that I'd felt so lost for so long and out of control, you know, in this career. Therapy's trying to blame my past. AA saying that I haven't got power of this. And then suddenly I felt in control again. And I was like, well, hang about. Let me do this. Let me start to work out again. Let me start to, you know, try and build that discipline back. And what that did is it really changed my outlook. And I started to lose weight. I started to feel myself again. And I was breaking free. You know, I wasn't sober for sure, but I realized the damage that was doing. But then what happened is that I'd saved money and we moved back to England in July 2021. But then obviously everything started to open up again and we got approached from a really big agency. And straight away, I forgot all about this. And my focus was on being a DJ again, you know. I thought I'd come so far, I could do it this time, you know. I've got a bit of control about me. And I told my brother, and we got a whole load of shows. We got an Australia tour planned, New Zealand tour planned, all these shows in England. I couldn't believe it. And I remember we moved back to Southampton because I didn't want to move back to London because I knew I wasn't safe at this point. So we moved back to Southampton. We went to Bournemouth and I said to Liam, look, the agents just rang. We've got all these gigs. And he said, Sean, I don't care. I said, I'm out. I've had enough. You know, we had a good innings, but I could, he basically, because the thing is, Liam was going through his own journey as well, but it was overshadowed because I was in such a bad way that people almost just thought Liam was fine, you know. And he had gone through his own journey and he said, look, I'm out. But I was like, all right, fine. So I was going to do it on my own. I was going to do it in control. And I went to Nottingham in July 2021. The idea of me being a DJ again, I said, I'm going to do all my gigs sober. Okay. Well, I didn't realize it's not that easy just to say that. You've got to do the work. And I hadn't really done the work yet. I hadn't been back into that situation. It was fine when I was, you know, out of the, you know, the trigger zones. But I went back and I went to this gig in Nottingham and I said, I'm not drinking. And then I started playing and I had one drink and then I had another, then I had a line. And then before you know it, I woke up in hospital. And I had big gash in my head here, black eye, blood all over me. I was being really aggressive to everyone. I have no idea what happened. Doc said I had a lot of cocaine in my system, could have died. Police apparently brought me in. I remember, you know, I was furious with everyone. You know, it wasn't my fault. And I remember going into the toilet and I just broke down. And I just thought, I can't do this anymore. And I rang my dad. And it was ironic because my dad and my brother were out running down in the New Forest. And I was in the hospital. And so I rang my agent the next day and I quit. And I was like, that's it. I'm out. I can't do this anymore. I can't be in that environment. It's not worth the risk anymore for me, you know, because where's it going to end up? Dead? It's going to be no good for anyone. And that's when I started to rebuild. That's when, I'm not going to lie, it was scary because I'd spent 10 years in the industry, you know, building this character, this persona, this identity of Mr. Cool Berlin DJ, vinyl only, you know. But I wasn't any of that. I was a broken man. I was, you know, absolute rock bottom. And that was a hard pill to swallow for sure. But it ended up being the best thing that I could have ever done. Yeah.
I mean, Sean, what a story. Mm. I mean, I think you might have lived more places than anyone I've ever met before in my whole entire life. We've had a good old travel around the UK and a bit of Europe there as well. You, when you were talking then about control, it, you know, what is it called when someone breaks your dream? I had that feeling. You just reminded me of something that I haven't thought about for years now. We've been doing this podcast for so long that you kind of forget, but I need to go back and have a listen. One of the reasons, and I completely forgotten this, one of the reasons I decided to try going alcohol free in 2020 was because I wanted to feel like in a world that was out of control with the pandemic and stay at home and this and that, you know, that kind of craziness of what is this thing? What do we know? What don't we know? You know, is there a going to be a vaccine. It could be years, you know, just the chaos of that time. For me, choosing to go 3 months alcohol free initially, it was to take some control back. Mm. And I completely forgotten that until you mentioned it.
It's beautiful. Like,
but it was, so it's just completely just, mm-hmm. yes, that was such an important thing for me.
Mm.
Talk to me about control. Like, why is that important for you?
Mm. I think it stems back to my childhood quite a lot. You know, I thought I was an out of control child. You know, no one could tell me what to do. No one at all. And I think I felt out of control as well. I didn't have any direction, any purpose. Obviously, when I joined the military, that sense of discipline, I always remember that, you know, from basic training, just that strength that the discipline give me is, you know, the confidence in my ability. I think it was such chalk and cheese situation. And then going through, obviously, 10 years in the music industry, I was out of control again. And especially when I got to that rock bottom moment, I was completely out of control. When I woke up in hospital, I had no control over that. And that's what sobriety has brought me is control again over my decisions. And I think that's why it's been so important for me, because when I'm in control of my decisions, then life just moves forward. It moves in a direction where I want it to go. Whereas when I'm drinking, taking drugs, I'm not in control. There's always a situation where I'm not in control, and that's always a bad situation and a negative situation.
Well, something bad can always happen there, can't it?
Exactly.
And again, another similarity, like I'd go out, and so when you were going out drinking in Wolverhampton, I was a few miles down the road going out drinking in Birmingham. Okay. And I would, you know, looking back on it, and I've said this quite a lot of times to Shaz, didn't think about it at the time, but actually I was a grown man walking around Birmingham city centre, completely out of control, because I wake up the next morning, can't remember last night, but you know, I'm not in control of my mouth. I'm not in control of my body at that point. I'm so pissed that I'm in a major city centre in the UK, out of control. And like you said earlier on, 9 times out of 10, no drama.
Mm.
But there's always the 10.
Absolutely.
And I think I totally agree with you. One of my absolute favourite things now about being alcohol free is that I am always in control of my actions and what I say. Mm. And the reason that that's so important for me personally, Sean, is because I now know that I can always represent myself. Whatever situation I'm in, I can always represent myself in the way that I want to be represented. What comes out of my mouth aligns with, you're talking about your granddad and his values earlier, it aligns with my values. When I used to drink, Sean, I'd wake up the next day and I'd go, why the bloody hell did I say that last night? I don't even think that.
Mm.
Like, I don't believe that. So why did I say it? You know, I've upset that person over there. But why? You know, and for me, it's not control in a kind of, you know, a kind of controlling, aggressive, you know, control. It's a calming control for me. It's right. Okay, cool. I'm me and I'm in control of my thoughts and my actions. And therefore I can represent me as the person. Shaz, I'm really sorry. Me and Sean.
I love that. It's exactly the same for me. That is, it's what you said there is I'm in control of my values now, of who I want to be, who I represent. And I always used to think that that's who I was when I was a DJ, but I wasn't, because I was getting smashed all the time and always doing stupid things and then wondering why that was. It's because my actions aren't aligned with my values. Mm-hmm. And that's never going to be possible when I'm, you know, when I'm drinking, because I'm always out of control.
But it's almost like this is the persona. This is me, the DJ. This is how I'm going to be. This is the crazy life I'm going to lead. And oh, look at me living my best life, when actually it's not that, is it?
Not at all.
There's drink, there's drugs, your mental health's in the gutter. Mm-hmm. It's a shit show, and it's heartbreaking.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Again, I was very much, you know, Mr. Cool on the outside, but I wasn't on the inside. You know, I remember many times from the studio, especially in Berlin, just ringing my mom, crying, with no idea what I'm going to do. And obviously, what can they do? You know, they can't do anything. But like you said, but I'm a fully grown man. Like, you know, I'm choosing to do this by myself. because I keep putting myself in a situation where I'm, you know, when I'm drinking or using drugs. So
what I love as well is right from the start when you talked about when you were younger and you had an interest and an excitement in sport and fitness and looking after yourself, there's been a thread throughout everything you've done. All right, maybe not so much the DJing time, you know, but you've come full circle. Willa's Fitness, you're back to doing now your passion. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so when I come out of the industry, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And the first job I actually got was a PE teacher. It was funny. I was looking for fitness jobs and I got a job as a PE teacher. The guy who ran it was ex-military. So we bonded anyway. He was like, yeah, give the job a go. And I loved it. And I spent a year doing that. But at the same time, I started documenting my journey on my Instagram, my journey through recovery. And that was building a foundation at first. So having a solid foundation for me, it was fasting every day because that kept me in control. I was moving my body. I was eating more whole foods. You know, I was just improving my health. I was becoming more disciplined. And then I went through a transformation, body transformation. That body transformation then wasn't just about the aesthetic. It was what was happening internally for me. I was able to commit to doing hard work, to turning up. And people started to reach out to me. A lot of DJs that I respected, because obviously there's a lot of people struggling in the scene. Anyway, I had a friend who had a really big influence, and he was based in Ibiza. And he said, look, Sean, I want to get involved in this. Would you train me up? And I didn't know about the online space at the time because I'd come from the gym floor. And I was still going through my own recovery. You know, I still wasn't sober at this point. It was, you know, one or two times where I went out and went to parties, and I thought it was okay because that temp time hadn't happened yet. And anyway, he documented the journey, and he got an incredible result, and I built this program, which is now called the Take Back Control Program. And so many people started to reach out to me. I couldn't believe it. Not just DJs, people from all over the world, from, you know, from Africa to, you know, India to America. And again, a lot of people that I respected in the industry. So I built the program, and by August 2022, I was earning more from the coaching than I was from the PE teaching. Even though I love that job, I sort of had to make the decision in September whether I wanted to go full time or carry on, because I wanted to let the school know before, you know, before the term started. So I left the job and I went full time with Willa's Fitness, and that has been an incredible journey in its own, but it's also helped me recover, because I think one of the biggest parts for me in my recovery has not only been fitness, because that always keeps me really grounded, but it's been able to vocalize, you know, my journey and articulate that and hear other people's stories as well. And when we started Willa's Fitness, it was just working with people in the music industry, and we've worked with some incredible DJs, a couple of BBC Radio 1 DJs. We're still working with one now, actually. We've worked with some of the best DJs in the world in my space. I've been very privileged to do that. But I also realized that I moved away from the music industry for a reason, and I wanted to help, you know, more people like myself, people who have so much more to offer, who are maybe successful and very, you know, very hardworking, shall we say. But this one thing is holding them back, and that's, you know, drugs, alcohol, or just poor habits. But that being said, when I was going through my own journey, I got through periods of sobriety. I wasn't really counting. But then in August 2023, I had a really bad relapse. I'm not too keen on using the word relapse. But I went to the boxing, took my brothers there, and I had a couple of drinks, and I bumped into someone who had cocaine, and I spent the whole night just searching for it, and I found some, and I left the boxing. I went on this complete self-destruction path, you know. And I remember waking up the next day, my wife was not happy at all, as you would imagine. My brother was disappointed with me, and I was disappointed in myself. And I remember I'd done all this work up to this point, and I thought I could go down the route of right and back to square one, or I can take responsibility, I can learn from this, and I can move forward. And I remember I had a bit of cocaine left. And I almost went, I said it to myself, I'm never going to use this again. But I went to hide it. And I thought, well, what am I doing? If I'm never going to use this again, why am I hiding it? You know, it's such a old sort of pattern that I would do, because that's what I would do back in the days. I'd say I'm never going to do it again, but if there was some left, I'd save it just in case. So I threw it down the toilet and I put a big post out on my Instagram. And I was, you know, on Willis Fitness. And I just explained what happened and I took full responsibility for it. And, you know, I had so much positive messages, so many people related to that. And since then, I've not drunk or done drugs since, and I've not even considered it. And I think the reason why is because from July 2021, when I woke up in hospital, to August 2023, the only time that I've been out of control, or I've had a setback, or I've wasted a day, or I've upset my wife, or I've wasted money, has been when I've been drinking and using drugs. And I just thought, what's the point anymore? You know,
yeah.
What's even the point of just trying to even moderate it at the end of the day? Because it never, since 14 years old, has brought anything positive into my life. On that, what I did is stop focusing on quitting drugs and alcohol, because that for me is what I was always doing. I was always putting the emphasis on the negative. And what I started to do is think of the positives that I will get from not drinking and taking drugs anymore. And that's now what I do. I don't associate myself as Sean, an addict or an alcoholic. I'm just someone that doesn't drink or use drugs anymore. And the reason why I don't is because I've got so much that I want to achieve in my life. I've got so many people that I want to make happy and I want to help. The only way I'm going to be able to do that is if I leave that behind. Yeah. And that approach is, you know, has helped me alongside with all the work that goes with it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not easy. It's absolutely not easy. And your story, it's incredible. I've got one final question, but before we do, because we've got just a couple of minutes left now,
yes.
Sean.
Sorry.
I think Ben may want to jump in.
No, you know what? It's just, it's very simply to ask you, Sean, what makes you happy?
Oh, wow. That is a fantastic question.
Can I tell you why I'm asking?
Yeah, please.
Because we're the same age. And growing up, going to clubs, DJs, hero, on stage, oh my God, travelling the world, the glamour. You think that these are things that make you happy. Actually, what you've put in your email to us is a really lovely sentence in here, actually. Since quitting, my life has transformed, you say. No more drama. I'm happily married. I've built a business I'm proud of, and I'm in the best shape of my life. What makes you happy?
Do you know what? I'm going to say just being, I think being in control is making me happy, if that makes sense. Just knowing that when I wake up, I am fully in control of what's going to happen for that day, and just making sure that I make the most of it. You know, I wasted so much time. I pissed so many people off. Excuse my swearing.
That's fine.
You know, I let down so many people, and now I know that that won't happen, because when I wake up, I'm in control.
I love that answer.
Because, you know, how simple is that?
You
know, we, the DJ lifestyle, fame. It's money, it's success, it's adoration, it's this, it's travelling, it's glamour, it's this, that and the other. Actually, take all that crap that society tells you you should want away, and actually what makes you happy, it's just very simply being in control.
It's
so simple.
Can I add to that as well? But it's funny you said that, because this is the first time I've ever owned a business, and there's so many external influencers saying that you have to be earning this much, you have to be earning that much. And for a time, especially last year, I really was getting caught up on the numbers. And I took a step back and said, who is dictating that to me? And like, my brother now works full time with me in the business he started last year, which has been an incredible journey in itself, you know, like what a journey we've had. But we had the conversation, it's like, well, why do we have to hit certain numbers? Like, I just want to feel free, you know, in control. I want to, you just not have to worry about these numbers. And am I waking up happy? Am I serving a purpose? Am I working towards a goal? You know, am I getting to spend quality time with my wife? These are the metrics now that I value, rather than numbers on a screen. And I think that when you said that there, it just resonated with me quite a lot.
Sean, we are out of time, but there's one question that I want to ask you. Mm. What would you say to 15-year-old Sean that was sofa surfing, that was struggling, that was, in inverted commas, the bad kid?
Good question. Do you know what? It wouldn't be anything like don't drink or, you know, go to school and behave. It would just be don't give up. You know, don't give up. I think that would be it. Because, I mean, that's one thing that's got me through everything, is just not giving up on myself. And that's the one thing that I'm probably most proud of that I've achieved, I think, is just not giving up when it would have been easier to.
Amazing. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us.
On Over the Influence. It's not a problem. Before you go, as quickly as you can, if people want further information about you, your socials, your website, your business, where can they find that? Give it a quick plug.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Willers Fitness. I message every single person back. So if you have a question, you relate to some of my content, please just message me. And then for the more business savvy professional, you can find me over at LinkedIn at Sean Willers.
Oh, get you, Mr. Willers on swanky LinkedIn. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.